Mike centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Wednesday, September 11th. Welcome to the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We are, I guess if you count physicals and fitness testing as the official start of training camp, we are a week out from the start of training camp. And then the first on-ice sessions will be next Thursday at the Scotiabank Saddledome, a Young Stars Classic in Penticton before we get there. And as we continue previewing the season, very happy to welcome in our next guest. We say hello to the color voice of the Calgary Flames here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. She's back for year two behind the mic with Wilsey. We say hello to Olympic gold medalist Megan Mickelson. Hall of Famer Megan Mickelson, which we'll get to a little bit later on. Hi, Mick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are we?
Doing well. Doing well. How are you doing?
I am freaking fabulous. I can't believe you just said everything is a week away. It's coming up hot.
Yeah, it really is. How what's the excitement level like for year two?
Really, really excited. Definitely. I think last season was awesome to get in with the group and obviously to work with my two great friends, you and Wilsey. Had a lot of fun, but going into year two, not going to lie, I'm definitely feeling a little bit more excited and complete transparency. Last season, there was a new position, a new role for me. And this year, definitely feeling a lot more comfortable and really excited to dive into everything that is going to happen this season.
I'm really curious as to your view on this group. You know, there's been a lot of, even going back to the start of last season to where we are now, there's been all kinds of change, and it was a non-playoff year last year. The Flames have said goodbye to a lot of high-profile veterans over the last couple of seasons. You know, as we enter this 24-25 season, what are your expectations for this group? And maybe not even expectations, just when it comes to wins, losses, standings, just overall, what are some of the things that you're expecting from this group for the coming season?
Yeah, I have a hard time with, you know, looking as far out as, you know, the standings and making the playoffs and how many points they're going to end up with in the standings. It's, you know, to me, like, we're not even at camp yet. So my number one expectation, and as a former player, I mean, these guys have all trained their tails off all summer long. And especially, you know, some players having disappointing seasons last year, coming into this year, there's no doubt that they've all put in a really hard summer of training and a ton of work. So, you know, if you're a player going into camp, then you're coming in, and my expectation would be that things are going to be extremely competitive at main camp. You look at the veterans in this group, champions like Blake Coleman. I know you guys just talked about him, a guy with the grit and the intensity like Nazem Kadri, a recent Stanley Cup champion, and Ryan Wahlberg. Like, I mean, these are guys who have won. They know what it takes to win. They're champions. They're not going to stroll into a season and just kind of roll over, and led by Michael Backlund, of course, who did an amazing job with the team last year and leading the group through the roller coaster ride that season was. But then you also have, you know, the younger players, guys like Darian Pospisil, who had outstanding years last year, but now the pressure is on. You know, can you repeat those types of performances and even elevate your game a little bit more? You know, Matt Coronato, a guy like Jeremy Poirier on the back end, who was, you know, riddled with injuries. And then, you know, the younger ones like Sam Hanzik. So, you know, there's a an interesting mix in terms of veteran guys who are extremely competitive, vocal leaders who want to keep everything on the rails over the course of the season. And, guys like Blake Coleman, he's going to make sure that guys are held accountable, that they show up to the rink every single day, ready to go to work, to put the work boots on. And then the younger players coming in and pushing for jobs. So I think, starting with camp, I would say that's my number one expectation, is that things are going to be extremely competitive. You have guys coming in also who are fighting for jobs. Jared Tenorti, like, he doesn't sound like a guy that's just going to, come in and roll over. He's going to come in and battle. Tyson Berry on a PTO, like, he is literally fighting for a job. He's got kids, a family. So these guys, they have a lot on the line. And, when you have that kind of mix, it's what makes, this season, heck, it makes camp super intriguing for me in terms of, how competitive is it going to be? Who is going to step up? Who's going to stand out, and who's going to make an impression? So before I give any season expectations, I would like to see how camp rolls out, what the preseason looks like, and who jumps out and stands out in that time.
Megan, I want to jump in on something you just mentioned, and that was the accountability and the importance of those veterans, because this is something I wanted to ask you when we had you on today. Like, from your career, we're going to talk a lot about, setting the culture, and those are sort of buzzwords, I guess, Pat and I are guilty of just sort of throwing around. Can you give us an example in a locker room of what that actually looks like?
Oh yeah. I think of probably the best example that I have would be, it was the 2014 Olympic year. And our captain was Carolyn Ouellette. And she was, I would say she's the best captain that I have ever had the opportunity to play with. But it was, we had an abysmal year. Our team was riddled with injuries, a ton of adversity. We lost our coach less than 2 months before the Olympics, ended up, having Kevin Dineen come and step in and did a great job. But I think of the importance of, not just our captain, but our entire leadership group throughout the course of that entire Olympic year. And then specifically heading into the Olympics on a 5-game losing streak to the Americans. And, I would say two moments that stand out in my mind with Caro was, it was the night before the gold medal game in Sochi, and she had a meeting with the team and afterwards sent out a letter to the group. Now, I'm not going to say exactly what the letter said, but it was her leadership and how vocal she was and the message that she delivered that really brought our group together in a crucial time. But it's also that, the emotional intelligence and the awareness of the timing of not just what you say, but when you say it and how you say it, how you deliver it. And so that's very, very important when it comes to leadership and to veterans. And she's one in my mind that sticks out as, the tougher the time is and the more adversity that you're faced with, the more important it is to have someone that you can look to that is that highly respected, but can, deliver messages that are timely and really resonate with the group. And it was between the third period and the overtime in the gold medal game. So for anyone who doesn't remember that game, we were down 2-0 to the Americans with less than 3 minutes to go in the game. And we end up tying it up and going into overtime, tied 2-2. And we go into the dressing room after the third period and everyone's just kind of, bouncing off the walls, screaming, hooting, hollering, really excited, obviously. And it was in that moment that she said, "Hey guys, like, let's just settle down. We have a game to win here. We know that this game is ours. We've got this." And a few other messages that were very specific to the group. There's things that you go through over the course of a season that really bring groups together. So she's the best example that I can think of from my career. And so now when I see leaders and, you know, a guy like Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund as well, and some of the things that they say, even in the media and how they say it, it's like, you can tell that those are guys that when they speak up in the locker room, everybody listens. And not only do they listen, but those are messages that resonate with the group. And that's going to be extremely important for this team this season.
Mick, you know, building on that, we're chatting with Megan Mickelson, color voice of the Calgary Flames here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Building on that, you know, you've got this leadership group and this group of veterans. And you've got a team, and I know, and I fully respect the whole idea of not wanting to talk about expectations for the full season. I think that's that is really important. I think it's going to be huge inside that locker room to not be thinking big picture. But when, you know, in the next few weeks, when all the networks and all the publications start coming out with their season previews and their standings predictions, you know, nobody's going to have the Flames in the playoffs. Nobody's going to have the Flames fighting for near the top of the Pacific Division. And the external expectations from around the league are going to be lower than they've been in quite some time. And I wonder, you know, kind of building on your experiences with the national team and all of your time playing, like, what's the mindset when, as much as you try to block out external expectations, when you know that the hockey world is not thinking of you as a team that's got a chance, when the hockey world isn't giving you a shot to do anything, what can that do inside a room?
Yeah, I guess I've been on kind of both sides of that, where you're expected to win and your team, the team that's expected to win, and then you're the team that's expected to lose. And as being on the team that's expected to win, it's the ones that are expected to lose that you're actually afraid of, because you know that they're playing with freedom. You know they're playing like they have nothing to lose. They're the underdogs, and those teams can be extremely dangerous, especially, and that's what intrigues me about this Calgary Flames team, is the level of, I think, you know, what the veterans bring, the mix, like you mentioned earlier. I think that they can put together a group that could be very competitive and can be snarly and can be scary to play against. And I mean, the parity in this league, anybody can win on any given night. So, you know, I think it's good to be on that side of the coin when you're the team that's, you know, not expected to be the greatest. You're a little bit out of the limelight. Not everyone's focusing on you. There's not as much pressure. You can just go out there and you can play. And from an individual standpoint, like I remember going into camp with the national team before the World Championships in 2022, and I hadn't played a full tournament for the national team since 2018 at the Olympics. Following that year, I had a baby, and then COVID happened, and then I blew my knee out. And I was going to retire, but I decided I was going to, you know, take one more kick at the can. But I really had nothing to lose in terms of, I had, you know, I'd won an Olympic gold, I'd won a world championship gold. And this was, you know, for me, it was, you know, going in there and competing and being the best that I could be. And there were zero expectations around, you know, the type of player that I was going to show up and be. And it was so refreshing to show up and to be able to just go out there and just to play freely. So, you know, I think that from a team standpoint, there is that element as well, that when there isn't that pressure, there isn't that expectation to, you know, win a Stanley Cup, that you can go out there and it's a lot easier, you know, to execute because there isn't that level of pressure.
Mick, we were just kind of talking prior to this and some of the spots we wanted to go with you, and because you've been in so many different situations in your playing career, put yourself like near the end of your time with the national team and near the end as of your playing career. as younger players are coming up and younger players are starting to fight for roles. And, you know, you've got a Flames team that is going to be really young. It's a smaller veteran group, and there's a whole lot more inexperience on this team. What's that like as an older player? What's that like as somebody with more experience when you've got all that youth around you?
Well, you feel old. That's for sure. When everyone around you is young, you definitely
is that when you feel
a little bit old.
Is that when the famous Megan Mickelson nickname came to be over the last few years?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That is correct.
Okay. You get to decide whether or not you want to tell us the nickname or not.
No, it's fine. My latest nickname was Muscle Mommy. Because I showed up at fitness testing. I'm 38 years old, and I did 17 chin-ups. First on the team in chin-ups. And so from then on, the girls harassed me and called me Muscle Mommy.
My favorite.
It is pretty funny. You realize that you have a responsibility and I think we saw it last year with Nazem Kadri and how he embraced that veteran role and the responsibility of, you know, showing those younger players the ropes and bringing them along. And it's a job and a role and a responsibility that as a vet, you take a lot of pride in. Like that's the future of your organization that you are building, and you are shaping the careers of young players. And, you know, it's a pretty amazing job if you think about it and how impactful you can be. We saw it last year and what he did with Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil, and just how he really, you know, brought them along. And that's going to pay off for those guys, not just this season, but down the road as well. So for all of those veteran players, like, you have the responsibility to do that. But you also, like, I remember as an older player, just how much those younger players push you. Like, your energy is, you know, very... I wouldn't say it becomes, you know, limited, but it definitely goes downhill as you get older. And those young guys that come in, and it's like they have so much energy and so much intensity, and they're able to sustain that for, you know, longer durations and throughout the course of the season. And so those players, they really push you, and in practice as well. It's that, you know, youthful, you know, just the jump in their step and the energy, and that really pushes the veterans too. So I think, you know, the benefits are twofold, and having those vets with that responsibility to bring those younger guys along, to show them the ropes, to relay, you know, the experiences that they've had and to help bring them along. But then the younger guys, like, they have to, their job is to bring the energy, to bring the creativity. We've seen that the game has changed so much, and the skill level of some of the younger players now it's outstanding. So for those guys to kind of bring in a different level of thinking, different ways of playing the game and seeing the ice. So I think that, you know, they can build off of one another. So there's definitely benefits on both. And that's something this group can really take advantage of, because, like you said, there's a lot of young guys coming in, and they're coming from different teams, different organizations. And if you can collaborate with one another on, you know, different ways of doing things on the ice, then that's going to benefit the entire group.
Megan, you know how Pat is. He's always got lots of questions. We got to get to the Hall of Fame part later.
Hall of Famer, so, Megan Mickelson.
So congratulations. Part of the latest induction class, the Athletic Hall of Fame at the University of Wisconsin. What was the weekend like?
Oh, it was incredible. It was awesome. We flew in on Thursday. Friday, we toured the facilities. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever seen the athletic facilities at the University of Wisconsin, but they are, like, off the charts absolutely incredible. So we did a tour Friday night. We had the induction ceremony, which was, I mean, it was pretty surreal for me. Like, I would say when I was at the University of Wisconsin, if you would have asked me while I was there that this would ever happen, I would have told you you were crazy. I had a good college career, but when I graduated, I hadn't even gone to a senior national team camp yet. Like, I
really,
I graduated. Yeah, I graduated. I got a degree in business. I majored in marketing. Moved home in with my parents, and I got a full-time job at a marketing agency downtown Edmonton. So, you know, when I graduated, this was nowhere in sight. So to be at the ceremony on Friday night, a few of my teammates were there, which was really, really special. My parents came down, so that was amazing. There's no way I would have done nearly anything, accomplished any of what I did without them. My husband Scott was there, which was also cool because we met my senior year when I was at the University of Wisconsin. He was playing for the Milwaukee Admirals that year. So we met then, and then just to have the kids there, like, that's my kids, my son Calder, he's now just about 9, and my daughter Berkeley, she's 5 and a half, and that's, they see me play for the national team, but my university career is something that was very foreign to them. So to be able to introduce them to that and to talk about it and show them around Madison was really cool. And then, of course, the football game, like, the football games in Madison are absolutely insane. They had a sold out crowd. I believe it was 84,000 people. We got to go down on the field, and they introduced us at halftime. So that was really, really special. But it was just it was a perfect weekend. Surreal at many moments, but very, very special for me. I said during the ceremony that, you know, I didn't have the easiest time when I was in college. So it was a really, really special weekend, really special honor for me. And going in with, I mean, the names that are in the Hall of Fame at the University of Wisconsin, like, it's very humbling for me to be in there. So it was really cool.
I learned something because I was reading about it just to make sure I had all the facts straight. You were recruited as a forward? You started playing forward at Wisconsin? I had no idea.
I was a forward my entire life until my junior year at the University of Wisconsin. And I joke that Mark Johnson, who is our head coach, he moved me back to defense because I wasn't scoring enough goals and getting enough points on forward, and he wanted to make sure that my scholarship was being well used. So he moved me back to the blue line, and things worked out really well. But if it wasn't for Mark moving me back to defense, like, and then going on and playing for the national team on defense, if it wasn't for him, like, who knows if I would have ever made the national team and where I would be now. So It was pretty cool. I saw Mark when I was down there as well, and what a career he's had with that program. So it was cool to reflect on that too. There's things that happen in your life that are very pivotal moments, and that was one of them.
Well, and if you go and Mick, if you go even the last few years, so you're part of the class of 2024. You go take a look at some of the other athletes just in the last couple of years. Flames legend Gary Suter was a member of that class of 2022. One of your on-ice rivals, Hillary Knight, was part of that class. Last year's class, J.J. Watt was a part of, Monty Ball was a part of, Brianna Decker, and even Adam Burrish, Stanley Cup winner, is part of this year's class. Like, it's got to be cool to take a look at just those last 3 years, the names that you're a part of in the Wisconsin Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of pride that comes with that and going to the University of Wisconsin. That's why, like, Wilsey gives me a bad time whenever there's a player on an opposing team on a broadcast that went to the University of Wisconsin, because I'm very sure to mention that they were a Badger. But it's that pride, right, that comes along having gone to that school and, you know, seeing all the athletes that have come out of there, like it's absolutely incredible. But that just speaks to like the UW athletic department. And I talked about the facilities, like they're off the charts incredible. And that's a big draw, but it's also, you know, the notoriety that comes along with, you know, saying that you went to the University of Wisconsin, like it comes with a lot of pride. So like I said, I'm super honored, and it was a perfect weekend.
And hey, if Wilsey ever gives you a hard time about mentioning the University of Wisconsin, you just give him a hard time anytime he mentions somebody who played for the Hamilton Bulldogs. So it works both ways.
That's fair.
I think now that he knows you're in the same club as JJ Watt, you probably won't have to worry about it. That'll keep him quiet.
Maybe I get a pass.
Yeah, that'll keep him quiet.
Great stuff, Mick. Awesome to have you on. Looking forward to seeing you next week at training camp. Enjoy the final week of the off season. Hey.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. We'll see you soon.
It's Megan Mickelson, your color voice of the Calgary Flames on Sportsnet 960. Back for season 2 behind the mic, joining us to help preview the coming season on the ice. Megan joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, I think it's safe to say that Connor Zary's coming to camp with his eyes wide open and that he is entering training camp 2024 knowing the gauntlet that's in front of him. Because Connor was one of the stories, one of the positive surprises from last year. He proved he's an NHLer. He proved he can produce in this league. But that was as a rookie. And that was when maybe there were, you know, fewer expectations, less pressure. The league was less aware of what he brought to the table. But it was nonetheless one of the real positives from last season. Like when we were breaking down last year, albeit the Flames missing the playoffs, you know, you did not go very far when talking about what were the positive takeaways before you got to Connor Zary. So now it's year 2. Now it's the sophomore slump year, right? Now it's that dreaded second year that a lot of young players struggle through. And Connor is now looking to see if he can avoid that common narrative and if he can avoid having a difficult year or two in the NHL. And I'm going to play a clip in a second, but it was you who asked the question, Wes, about it, because it derived from a Rasmus Anderson quote from last season,
do,
right?
Do you remember that?
I do. It was from last season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it was
post-game. Yeah.
I want to say, because it was like everyone had a bunch of time. Rasmus Anderson was, you know, I can still picture him with his hands kind of leaned back on that sort of ledge. I guess it's like a cabinet inside the locker room. I don't remember as a reporter being in any sort of rush. So I gotta think it was after a matinee, and he talked for a good long time about the challenge of being a young player in the NHL, and particularly highlighting what he thought was the toughest part. And he said that's year 2, because the adrenaline has sort of worn off, the newness, the, oh my God, I can't believe I'm at Madison Square Garden. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm playing the Maple Leafs. Oh my God, is that Sidney Crosby over there? All of that has started to dissipate. And that's when you really realize the sort of grind that the National Hockey League can be. And so that's really, that one stuck with me. And I've thought about that in the context of Connor Zary and in the context of Martin Pospisil. And that's why I wanted to go down that road when we were fortunate enough to be joined by Connor yesterday in the Hot Stove Lounge.
And he's not unaware of the narrative. He's not unaware of the history. This was a little bit of our chat with Connor on Tuesday.
I talked a bit about that with Husk and Connie. It's second season can always be tough. I think you put a lot of expectations on yourself, right? You want to be a better player and you want to come in and out of the gates flying. And obviously I have those expectations for myself. And it's always tough to kind of talk about that. Like someone's going to say something. I'm always going to have a higher expectation with myself to be better than they even might think I can be. So I think that's always tough, but it's always trying to gauge that and trying to make sure you're doing the right things, the little things first, and just worrying about, hey, like, do I need to produce more? Do I need to do this? It's worrying about, hey, like, I got to come into this camp. I got to earn that spot again. I got to do that over. Try and emulate as much as you can to that first year. Obviously, it's not quite the same. And there's also pros of that where, hey, I'm comfortable. Like, I've been with all these guys for pretty much a whole season. I know everyone. I know what Huss expects out of guys. And obviously, he knows what to expect out of me so that he can push me to be a better player. So I think just for me, it's trying to emulate that first season, just trying to earn things day in, day out, and game in, game out.
And I think it's really important that there is a realization here from the player that, yeah, year two can be difficult, and he's heard it. He's talked to Ryan Huska. He's talked to Craig Conroy about it. Like, that awareness, I don't know how much it will help. I don't know if the mental preparation, I don't know to what extent that'll make a difference in year two, but I know it won't hurt. Mm-hmm. And probably will help. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of maturity that you heard there from him, and I think that's really important for a guy going into year two in the league.
I wonder if some of that awareness, and Connor Zeri, even going back to his draft year, by all accounts, you know, he's a very aware, you know, he's not, this isn't a guy who's just kind of floating through his hockey career. You know, he certainly knows what's happening around him. He kind of has a sense of, you know, where he fits, I think. You know, I think you saw an example of that when he essentially told the Flames that he thought he should have made the opening night lineup a year ago. Like, this is a guy who I think is quite aware of his situation. But I wonder if some of that, and we heard him talk about his conversation with Huska and Conroy, like, don't forget, he went through kind of a tough stretch. I want to say like February, March last year. Like he started, I think, to
that's right. Remember, he got healthy, scratched.
Yeah, and there was an injury involved, so that certainly played a part in it. But I think he started to feel the reality of the grind that the NHL could be at that point. You know, he went a long time without a goal. He sort of dropped out of the Calder Trophy conversation. You know, for a while he was right there on the fringes of, could this be the third guy? By the end of the season, that conversation wasn't necessarily happening. He did finish on a high note with that stint at center, but I don't know, buddy. You correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that probably contributed to his awareness of what the grind of his second NHL season could be like as well.
Yep. And I don't know. I think that's fair. I don't disagree with that at all. And I think there's a lot of different elements that are going to go into year two. Like, there's the mental side. There's the fact that he's going to be counted on more. There's going to be more expectations on him, even more so this year than last year. He's going to be counted on to be an offensive catalyst on this team. Because, look, I mean, Elias Lindholm only played about half the season with the Flames last year, and they've said goodbye to Andrew Mangiapane. So, like, all of a sudden now there's even more offensive load to shoulder here if you're mm-hmm. Connor Zeri. On top of that, I don't know if the expectation is this or not, but at the very least, there is a serious conversation going on about him playing center this year and playing center all year. So there's also that, and yeah, the added pressure, added responsibility that goes on sure. with being a full-time NHL center. Like, there's a lot yeah. that goes into if, this year.
If I could add one more for you, this is a contract year for Connor Zeri as well. He's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this season, but, you know, he knows with another solid season, and it's not going to be top of mind, but he certainly knows, you know, if he can follow up what he did as a rookie, if he can build on what he did as a rookie, he's going to put himself in position for the sort of contract that will really help set a guy up for the rest of his life. I mean, he's in a position to, you know, really be able to ask for a solid National Hockey League contract. And that provides some pressure as well. So I know you want to talk more about the center ice thing, because I do think it's so fascinating. And, you know, the more I hear, the more I think I wouldn't be surprised to see both Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil playing center for long stretches of this season. I certainly know that they're going to spend a lot of time there in the preseason, but I thought his approach to that part was really mature as well.
This was Connor Zary on potentially playing center all year this coming season.
I think it's something I've always played throughout junior and in pro in the American League, and to get a taste of that in the NHL for however many games it was great. I think no matter what, at this level, you got to understand that you need to have tools in your toolbox, whether it means I am going to play center or whether I'm going to stay on left wing. I think to be versatile and have that understanding that you know you can play that, and obviously the system is still the same, but what you do inside that system changes a bit. But I think to have that understanding and have that in the toolbox is huge for me moving forward, whether it's used right away or not. It's something that I pride myself on and something that I felt comfortable doing.
What are the biggest adjustments to going from one to the other? You talk to different guys, and sometimes it's being the last man out of the zone. Sometimes it's the, you know, decision making that you got to make as the puck carrier entering the zone. For you, what were the biggest adjustments, or may continue to be the biggest adjustments playing down the middle?
Yeah, for sure. Those little things are like the details of the game. Just not so much like the individual details, but the systematic details change a little bit, and what you do inside of that. And like you said, the D zone, you're more involved in what could be a corner battle or whatnot. When you're in a wing, you're not going to come that low. So it's just little things like that, and really helping out and be that third option or second option, whatever you're in there, and really getting those details on. But I think one of the biggest things that sometimes gets overlooked is just straight up face-offs. You know, you got guys who are 12-year veterans, they got the little nuances,
yeah.
or maybe they look over the lines in a little wink here and a smile there, and they get their foot in quicker than you get in yours, and you're like, well, how'd that happen? Like, I got kicked out last draw for that. So I think it's just little things like that working on, because if you're winning draws and you're starting with the puck, you know, you're not worrying about those details being in the defensive zone, right? So I think that's honestly one of the biggest things. If you have the puck 60% of the time starting with it, it makes your life a lot easier.
So there's Connor Zary on kind of his approach to, if he doesn't know, we don't know how it's going to play itself out, but that's his approach on playing center this year.
He knows.
I think that they've told him that they want him to be a center. I think if you were to do a power rankings on who they have in terms of their desired centers,
yeah,
he would be at the top of it. Like, in outside of the Roonies and Backlunds and Kadris, who we knew and know are playing center, to be that kind of number three center, if you're talking about him and Pospisil and Sharon Govich, I think organizationally, Zary would be at the top of that power rankings for him in terms of the desired outcome, but you still need to see it, and he still needs to prove that that's where he'd like to be. But I think they'd like him to be that guy.
And I chatted with Martin Pospisil briefly at Cottonwood Golf Club yesterday, one of the two sites of the Flames annual golf tournament. And kudos again, $365,000 raised for the Flames Foundation. But in my chat with Martin Pospisil, I certainly got the impression that he's also been told to get ready to play a good chunk of center in the exhibition season, that's something they're going to want to see. And I believe both those guys are in that same boat. I think my best guess is we see more Zary and Pospisil at center during exhibition than we see them on the wing.
That's kind of what I'm expecting. Yeah. Why, and I'm not asking this in like a what are you thinking way, but you have been pushing this one like this. It's like I feel like it's this year's Dustin Wolf, right?
Pospisil at center.
What about that intrigues you so much? Like, what about him in that position? Because he is a natural center. That's where he's played up until making the jump to pro. But what about him intrigues you down the middle so much? hospital that is.
I do think there's some responsibility there that comes with the kind of maturity in his game. I know, because I've heard it over and over again, that the Flames have been trying to add speed at the center position forever, right? Like, this has been something that has been stuck in the craw of the organization, is we don't have enough speed up the middle. Well, Martin Pospisil can give you that in spades. And I've also, and I'll repeat it, but I've said it several times, I think that Martin Pospisil up the middle of the ice reins him in just the right amount. I still think he's going to get his licks on the forecheck. He's not always going to be the first guy to arrive, but I think you're going to put him with someone responsible enough on the wing that he's going to have the opportunity to jump up. But I also think arriving a little bit late is going to cut down on some of the penalties that Martin Pospisil took. And I know it's easy to say, hey, you know, yeah, he was a fan favorite for a reason. I love him on the forecheck. He had such an impact, and he did. Absolutely. I'm not discounting that or arguing it. But you also can't argue he took too many penalties in his first year. And I think center reins him in just the right amount.
Nothing wrong with that explanation. I still like him better on the wing, but there's nothing wrong with that explanation. Like there's a lot of, in my eyes, like, not that you need my validation, but there's a lot of valid points there. There's a lot of like, that makes sense. And maybe it's more that I really only see as it stands right now, the one spot open down the middle.
Sure.
Here, the reason why I always go back to Zeri out on top of Pospisil or Sharangovich. First of all, I'm fully out on Sharangovich as a center. I just don't think that's where he fits. I don't think at this stage of his career.
It's pretty hard to dress up those face-off numbers.
I think he struggled on the defensive side at center. I think he struggled on the play-moving side at center, and I think it also took away from his offense. It just made him far... Like, he just kind of was there.
Sort of neutralized him, didn't it?
Very much so. Whereas as soon as you put him back on the wing, that shot's back and that swagger's back, and there's something there. To me, he's a winger long-term. Pospisil, I'm more intrigued on for sure, and I think that you made some really good points. But for me, the reason why I always go back to Zeri is because when I project this team in 5 years' time, playing in a brand-new Scotia place, hopefully fighting for top spot in the Pacific and being at a place where they can be a contender again, I know they're going to need to find that bona fide number one center. That is now the last remaining piece. But I see the potential of Zeri being that next guy as your number two center.
Sure.
And being that really important piece behind whoever ends up being that franchise center ice, center iceman that we hope that they find here in the next couple of drafts.
Yeah, and my argument against Zeri at center has never been about Zeri at center. It's been about the fact that Nazem Kadri and Connor Zeri have more offensive chemistry than anyone on this roster. And so I'm looking short term. I love your long term viewpoint. You know, looking at the opening of the new rink and the excitement that's going to surround it, hoping that you have that number one workhorse center in place. But, you know, I look at, hey, we're going to need to score some goals this year. And I think Connor Zeri on the wing optimizes Nazem Kadri and vice versa.
And I think Pospisil on the wing optimizes Nazem Kadri and vice versa.
He's more of an offensive supporting piece for me, is the thing.
Pospisil?
Yeah, that's fair. I could see Connor Zeri scoring 20 some with Nazem Kadri. Yeah, I just don't see that offensive from Pospisil.
Well, I bet we'll have this conversation again, especially once we get to training camp and then we start to see it in preseason games. Yeah, we'll be talking about this again. We start to wrap things up this hour, though. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks for hanging out with us this hour, and thanks for joining us on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.